Down the Barrel starts now.
Good evening, Swally Sweet here with the CUSF Down the Barrel podcast and videocast. Apologize for missing last episode. Also apologize to you, David and Michael. Thanks for jumping in.
Okay.
Work happens. We got another guest with us today, Connor. Let's do a quick sponsorship, David, and then we'll get on to the show.
Yeah, so big thanks to Cabela's, as always. Outdoors Fun, providing a lot of funding for students to get out there and shoot. So be sure to round up anytime you shop at Cabela's. Other big shout out, follows right here at Beretta. They're good folks there, supporting sport shooting in Canada. So, yeah, happy to have them on as sponsors and really appreciate them helping us out. And Vortex, great optics, veteran owned. Really again appreciate their sponsorship. So, thanks again to Vortex and Stittsville Shooting Ranges. Helping with the Carlton Club, helping us out nationally. So, thanks to them, as well as our newest sponsor, Savage. So, pick up a Savage rifle, a Stevens shotgun, and 22s made in Lakefield, Ontario, so Canadian made as well.
Nice.
Yeah, big thanks to them.
That's what I shoot. Michael, anything new with firearms in the firearms community? More bad news, I heard.
Yeah, yes, some sad news today. Kodiak Defense. I think they announced it a little while ago. It's a KD-200. It's a bolt-action AR variant. It's not an AR variant. It doesn't fit. And they are lower, but it looks like one. And they built one of them as a prototype. And it was just released on Armblitics today that the KD-200 is prohibited for being too much like an AR-15, despite not having any AR-15 parts, except for maybe a barrel. So it just kind of goes to show the direction this country is going, and
one might argue the functionality, and I have done this when I was pro ban, I'm now against it, but one might argue the functionality between the assault rifle version and the AR-15, but I mean, this Kodiak is literally a bolt action.
Totally. It's just a scare factor. It looks like an AR-15, but functionally not the same at all. Yeah.
Right. And with us today, we've got Connor. Who are you?
So I'm an avid outdoorsman and a big fan of hunting and fishing. And I've been in the industry, firearms industry, for, I don't know, maybe 6 years now. I started the intern of my firearms career is kind of biathlon back in the day as a child, but then was later in university working at the gun counter at Cabela's, and got introduced to the world of firearms a lot deeper level, and got to learn all about the politics behind it all and all the fun jazz going on with all that, and that kind of just naturally transitioned into an avid drive to learn more about hunting, and worked as a fly fishing guide for a couple of years, and worked in a fly shop for 4 years, and now I'm running a small digital marketing agency that's kind of tailored to mom and pop shops in the hunting and fishing industry to try and help them kind of boost their e-commerce and social media presence and all that fun jazz as we progress into this world of digital everything, I guess you could say.
Nice. That's quite a niche market there. Is there much need for it?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of digital marketing kind of agencies out there, but not a lot of them kind of tailored to the hunting and fishing side of things. So there is quite a big demand for it just because there isn't a lot of people that have a specialty in kind of hunting, fishing, but then also have a specialty in, you know, search engine optimization, email marketing, social media management, web development, etc. So I'm quite busy, to be honest, and
nice.
Yeah, no complaints there.
Nice. Yeah, no, there's a more obvious crossover between archery and shooting, but the fishing and hunting is even bigger. Like a lot of the clubs around here, the one that Michael and I are both members of, it's a gun and rod club.
Hunting and fishing club.
Hunting and fishing, yeah.
Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, like,
what am I thinking of? Oh, semi ammo. I'm thinking of. I think.
Yes.
Gun and rod. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a huge industry, right? And it is pretty niche. I mean, COVID took a pretty big hit on kind of the tourism side of the industry. So a lot of the, you know, hunting outfitters, I mean, I was working as a fly fishing guide kind of when COVID hit, and that kind of killed almost about 98% of our clientele. So I definitely like the
hunting figuratively killed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
I just
figuratively. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Yeah, no, so I mean, I think the niche industry kind of is facing challenges now. I guess it's better now that borders are opening up and stuff, but yeah, we're definitely starting to see a spike in activity in the hunting and fishing industries again, so it's good to see for sure.
Whereabouts are you located?
So I'm stationed in Calgary, Alberta currently.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
So do you get much travel from the south then? Or much business, I mean?
Yeah, so when I was working up for a lodge called Fortress Lake. So they operate for 4 months out of the year, and they're actually just kind of on the Jasper side of BC, of Alberta, so kind of central BC. It's a fly-in mm-hmm. lodge there. So I'm not working with them anymore, but it was a great time when I was, for sure.
Nice. Oh, I didn't realize you were in Alberta as well. David, he's in Alberta there, judging by the three layers of clothing and the space heater and the,
oh yeah,
giant mustache he's growing.
Yeah, no,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, still, yeah. Still trying to.
my best ego impression.
Yeah,
all for the fellas. That's what really sells the gun and the ammo.
I'm gonna save this one for. Yeah. Anyways, looks good. I'm doing one myself. Actually, I'm doing it in Movember this year. I just cleaned everything up here yesterday, and I'm gonna try and do a little one of these. So we'll see what that looks like come next episode.
I gotta get the head start, otherwise fucking nothing grows throughout November.
Yeah,
yeah, like
no.
Three month in type deal.
I put an email out at work last night saying I'm doing a Movember. Anybody wants to jump into it, welcome to. And this one guy emailed me saying he's gonna go for it. He shaved especially, and this, like you, right? He's baby faced. Like I don't know if he even had anything to shave off. But I'm like, no, buddy, I appreciate the effort. It was nice. So it's for a good cause. So, Connor, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your involvement with the CUSF as well, because you're actually a member of ours as well, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I help out on the communication side of things in regards to kind of the social media, marketing, posts, etc. But yeah, the communications were definitely getting busier as we've kind of gone through a bit of a restructure and got some exciting things to come in the future for sure. But mm-hmm. Yeah, so working closely with the Tim and Megan and Travis, it's been a good time for sure.
Nice. And what's your day to day like in your real world job?
I mean, it's a lot of I kind of try to set it up so each day I'm kind of doing something different. So, you know, Mondays are kind of social media scheduling and posting. Tuesdays, you know, email marketing, stuff like that. Web development kind of comes and goes as clients kind of roll in, get a couple a month or so, you kind of fit that in as it goes. And then the kind of content creation is kind of my favorite part, and that's where I kind of get to get out hunting and fishing with people and gather kind of photo and video to kind of use later down the road.
Do you do your own AV, like you film and all that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I've spent the last couple of years on Google and YouTube kind of learning as much as I can in the digital marketing world. It's not quite hit the universities yet, so it's quite a niche environment to be in right now, mm-hmm. for sure.
Oh, cool. We're working on it. Fucking, we got a mentored hunt organized through our sister organization, the High Caliber Foundation, for the guys out at UBC there next week. So
that's right.
Excited about that.
Yeah, it's super generous. It's ACM Outfitters, based in Langley or Abbotsford, somewhere in the valley, is taking a handful of university students out to hunt ducks and geese, which is awesome. That's such a, when it's your first time, it's really hard to find that mentor. So getting that, the first step in to see how it's done is It's a great opportunity.
Anybody from the CSF going out?
Yeah, so it's all CUS, CUSF people. So it'll be myself, and then four CUSF members who are also students.
Okay, so no, I just meant not just members, but any of the like executive or whatever. So it'd be you're going out? Okay.
Mr. Stone, representative.
That'd be right. Get pictures. Get pictures.
Definitely. Yeah, I'll try.
Well, talking about first hunts, Connor, why don't you tell us about your progression through hunting? Because a lot of people grew up with hunting, but you kind of took a different path and learned it on your own, eh?
Yeah, so I mean, I've always kind of had the drive to kind of be self-sufficient in a way of like gathering my own food and all that fun stuff. But yeah, when I first kind of got into hunting, didn't really, nobody in my family, I guess like my last person to hunt in my family, I think was my great uncle. So yeah, I didn't really quite have that mentorship to go to right away. So I kind of just went to Cabela's and found the cheapest hunting option, which was a recurve bow. I think it was like $150 at the time, and just kind of started walking around the forest and started with small game, kind of rabbits and small stuff like that, and grouse, and kind of worked our way up and eventually got more into rifle hunting, as the recurve bow hunting definitely has its challenges with big game. But yeah, with that came learning how to, you know, call elk, call moose, you know, duck calling, all the fun stuff. It's kind of every different species has had its own rabbit hole to kind of run down, and never ending stuff to learn. But yeah, so pretty much kind of, I guess you could say, kind of an internet taught hunter, and learned as much as I can through personal experiences. And but yeah, it's been a bit of a challenge hunting public land and learning the ropes, but it's been a blast. Down the whole journey's been amazing, so yeah, I would recommend it to anybody for sure.
And do you still take people out on guided tours?
Fly fishing, yeah. If anybody reaches out, or I got friends or family that want to go out, it's definitely something that I do. In Alberta, it's quite easy because you don't necessarily, you need guiding insurance, but there isn't any kind of like guiding license or anything. So most, you know, anybody can kind of be a fishing guide as long as they kind of have that insurance, which is good and bad, because you get, you know, lots of people who maybe shouldn't be out guiding, mm-hmm. but it's a good. But yeah, definitely when I got it in BC, you had to go through a whole test and all that fun stuff to become a guide. So it's definitely a bit better regulated in other provinces. But yeah, Alberta is definitely a great place to fly fish for sure.
Do you go to different provinces or territories as well, or just stick to Alberta?
We're pretty fortunate in Alberta. I mean, we kind of have it all here, which is nice. We kind of have, you know, anything from the lake fishing, pike and walleye, to the high mountain stream, blue ribbon fly fishing. I have been out to BC for obviously like their kind of salmon and steelhead fishery, which we don't have access to here in Alberta, but there's definitely other provinces I'd love to get to. But fortunately here in Calgary, we're, you know, an hour in any direction, you're into some trophy size species. So very fortunate where we are now.
What's it like hunting or fishing in a different province? Like, do you need a different license, or does yours transfer over? Or?
It depends. Like this year I had the opportunity to go hunt sandhill cranes in Saskatchewan, and for waterfowl it's a federal issued license. So as long as you've taken a hunting course in you know, you have the right postage stamp that's federal regulated, the waterfowl province to province is a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. Some provinces allowed for like a hunter host type program, and that's where, say, I can host a resident of BC in Alberta as an Alberta resident, but they also just have to pay, I think it's about $100 to $150 more for the specific species of the tag that they're hunting for. But yeah, as an Alberta resident, you can host other individuals from out of province pretty easily to hunt big game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing I'm actually quite interested in hunting is boar, but we don't have a lot of that in BC, but I guess Alberta has a little bit.
Yeah, it's starting to pop up from what I hear in northern Saskatchewan, northern Alberta. It's starting to get a bit more popular, but it's mm-hmm. from what I hear, the access to the private land where they are is the hardest part of it all. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that progresses. Yeah. We might end up like Texas if we're not careful.
Why, what's Texas? They got boar problem down there?
Big time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's all sorts of crazy videos. Go look it up. But, like, people shooting boar with, like, machine guns out of helicopters. Just crazy. there's no rules. Like, they're considered a pest, so you can just mow them down.
Fair enough.
It may be ethically questionable, but
really
entertaining.
Culinarily questionable as well.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think they eat them all. But,
yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well,
that's a whole separate thing.
Species,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. There's a few hunts like that where it's just a couple places in Canada and it's super hard to get to. I think of turkey in BC being a similar way, where everybody really wants to try it, but there's maybe just like a few valleys in the interior where it's even possible, and then most of it is private land. But man, sandhill cranes, that's a crazy opportunity. We don't get that in BC.
It's wicked. Sirloin of the sky. They're delicious. So you can definitely tell you that much.
That's a pretty big target. I mean, that's got to be nice. Like, you really can't miss them, I feel.
Yeah, it's pretty wild when you got, 5 or 10 of them coming in on you. It's pretty crazy. They're big birds for sure.
And you go for like big full body decoys, like set up and all?
Yeah, we had silhouette decoys from Dive Bomb Industries, and those worked really well. They're nice too because they're a lot easier to store and than having kind of full body decoys take up a lot less room than silhouettes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like a full body sandal crane would be enormous. It'd be
it'd be a lot.
Yeah. No, I 2 weeks ago, I went out for snow geese in the Delta area, which actually may be similar, close to Boundary Bay, where we're going to do that guided hunt next weekend. And it's a quick story time. So we got out there early in the morning, set up for snow geese. We got about 100 silhouette decoys spread out. And we always kind of, like, just a few of us, and we're just barely experienced. But you hear the story that, like, okay, supposed to set up to like a big circle or something like that, and then have a hole in the middle where the geese try and land. So we did that, and we had maybe 5 geese come down in the morning. We each got one, and we sat there for 4 hours, and the geese would come by. You could see them looking at it, and then they'd be like, nah, they screw off. And I gave up, I left. And then so my buddies who stayed, they spread the decoys out more. They made a bigger hole in the middle. And then they said they were constantly coming in. They got another 10 of them. So setting up the decoys has more skill to it than just randomly throwing them out there.
You went home with one, you said?
Just one, yes. Boy.
Did you cook it?
It was delicious, yes.
Yeah, eh? Where did you learn to prepare birds? Is that like a course you take? Because I'd fucking just microwave it with feathers on.
No, I'm not super sophisticated. I don't have the time for plucking them. I just take the breasts out and the legs, and that's as far as I go.
I just the big bits out and then.
Yeah, some guys go for like the gizzard and the heart and other stuff, but
don't eat it.
Yeah, it's a little too much for me.
That's like the best part. Honestly, I like the heart and gizzard better than the fucking meat.
Okay, well, maybe I gotta try it. I don't know.
You gotta go hunting together, Michael. I'll take all your hearts and gizzards, you take all my breasts.
Alright. Connor, what do you think?
Man, the hearts, like deep fried bird hearts, definitely something to be, something to try there, Michael, for sure.
Okay, alright.
I haven't dabbled with the gizzard much. That's something I've kind of tried a couple times, but haven't quite mastered the recipe. But yeah, I think I usually I'll pluck the bigger birds for sure, because then you can kind of, you know, it's a little bit worthwhile roasting, and then cut the breasts out of the smaller birds for the barbecue or whatever, right? But
gotcha.
Yeah, no, definitely the snow geese. I haven't been snow geese hunting, but I hear that you definitely need a lot of decoys, and you gotta. Yeah, I hear it can be challenging for sure.
I just see photos of guys in Saskatchewan, Alberta, that I don't know. They got like a 500 decoys, and then they have like a whole pile of birds. I saw one on BC Waterfowl today of guys that went for a guided hunt in Alberta, and they got enough snow geese that they were able to spell out 200 with 200 snow geese on a field, and they get like an aerial photo of it. Because I think the limit is like 15 or something like that. It's a crazy.
Yeah, I think our possession limit is like, we're allowed unlimited, and I think our daily limit's like 50 or something like that.
Yeah,
that is, there's just so many. It's insane. Yeah.
Hello.
What do you like to hunt, Connor?
Definitely like moose meat for sure is probably my favorite. If I could get a moose tag every year, I wouldn't be complaining. But I'm a new big fan of duck, to be honest. Definitely kind of diving into the waterfowl game kind of the most this year. But duck breasts, you know, moose steaks, any kind of sausage, you can't go wrong. I guess like I honestly wouldn't turn down any kind of big game meat.
I got a question. What is the situation for public land waterfowl hunting around like Calgary, Edmonton kind of area? Is there actually spots or no?
Yeah, we're pretty fortunate. There's a lot of Ducks Unlimited land in Alberta. So they've actually bought kind of portions of land and then made it public for anybody to go hunt. So a lot of the good waterfowl lakes around Calgary actually have Ducks Unlimited access. So that's kind of more the over water stuff. But for, you know, over the field kind of geese, snow geese, stuff like that, that's a lot more private access stuff, which is a bit tighter. Right. But yeah, we're quite lucky. If anybody kind of wants to get into waterfowl in Alberta, there's, at least around Calgary, there's lots of Ducks Limited land that they can just go hunt whenever.
Me and Connor got 15 on Saturday there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, public land.
Yeah, it sounds like it's probably better out there than it is here. There's a grand total of 3 spots around the Lower Mainland for public waterfowl hunting. So it gets filled up pretty quick.
It's busy, eh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I see guys on BC Waterfowl saying like, oh, make sure you give like other hunters, say, 250 meters of space. And it's just like, it's not like the spot isn't that big. If there's like more than like 5 guys, it's full then. I don't know, like, I was there on duck opener, and there's probably like 20 guys in maybe like 1 kilometer of beach. Just
give everybody 25 meters of space. Cut it down.
Pretty much, people shooting over your head. You can see like pellets falling in the ground.
As long as you're not getting sprayed by pellets, that's when you know things are getting spicy. No.
Michael, I think you would really enjoy hunting in Alberta.
I'd love to.
I never spend much time outdoors in Alberta, but I did live in Alberta for 7 years, and it's a very, very pretty province. Lots of outdoors. Whereas here in the Lower Mainland, like I going camping or going bushcrafting or for you going hunting, I mean, you got to drive hours and hours just to get away from the city.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a trade-off. It depends what you like. I mean, I worked in Alberta for a couple of years, and I spent some time around Edmonton especially, and I feel like like if you want to go like hike in a mountain or like do kind of a fun, easy outdoor thing, the Lower Mainland is better. Like there's way more selection for like, I don't know, mountainous adventures. But in terms of hunting,
but that's like the urban outdoors.
Yes. The urban,
it's like the grouse grind.
I would honestly disagree. Like fucking, I don't know. Within 30 minutes of Calgary, there's a lot of fucking good hiking. Within 2 hours, there's like unreal.
Yeah. Okay. Fair point. I don't know.
Did you ever go north of Edmonton, Michael? I lived in Athabasca briefly, and Athabasca is absolutely gorgeous.
I've been there. I've been floating down the Athabasca River.
Oh, yeah.
Good time.
I got pinched by a cop for open alcohol next to the Athabasca River. that funny story. That was, if I remember correctly, that was 3 hours after I left my career in corrections, my 10-year career in law enforcement. 3 hours later, I get pinched. But we knew some of the same people, so that was a warning. But yeah, I thought that was funny.
There you go, the career paying off.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, we're hunting. What were we talking about?
Well, I know Connor's got a couple of good stories about when he was out elk hunting. Why don't you share some of those?
Which one specifically?
Well,
we're talking about the cats.
Yeah, exactly. When you're
I mean, we had a pretty close call with a cougar this year.
Wow.
which is like weird because like we never like, I mean, like, you know, I kind of grew up hiking and spent a lot of time in the backcountry, and you're always worried about bears, but you never really see cougars, so you kind of almost, you kind of almost forget about them, and we definitely kind of forgot about them. And yeah, we had a pretty close call to cougar this year while we were calling some elk. And I don't know if I got really shitty calling and I sound like a dying elk or what, but we had a cougar come in to like, I don't know, like 14 yards or so. And I don't know, I guess I could send you a photo maybe, but yeah, it was pretty wild. And then I was in there alone on a different trip. I went in for one night alone and I was setting up camp and had another smaller cougar sneak up behind me that night, in the same valley. So I don't know, there's some logging going on kind of a couple valleys over from where I was hunting. So I think they might've been pushing kind of the predators, but I had two close calls with, some cougars, in 1 week during kind of the 2 week bow season we have here for general elk. So it was pretty wild. But yeah, I can definitely pull up a photo here.
Yeah, send the photo to me on Signal and I'll put it on the screen.
I missed the comments here when we were talking about the urban hunting and all that stuff from David.
The cries in Ottawa. Yeah, man, Toronto, the GTA, that whole down to Ottawa, that's terrible. Yeah, I mean, you can't even find a range, right? That's I see that on Canada Guns constantly. People saying, oh, it's $1,000 a year for a gun range. There's a, you know, 2 year wait list. Yeah.
There's Marlboro Forest within an hour and a half to shoot squirrels, and that's about it.
Yeah. Da-da-da. Oh, yeah. Boar hunting in the US. Hi, Jeff. It's one of the UBC guys. Yeah, it is pretty crazy down there.
Yeah, check out. This guy.
Yeah. Did you find the picture?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. You gotta add it there, Swally.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. See the fucking. That's close. That's a big cat.
Wow. That's yeah. That's a.
It's pretty.
He's hungry.
And what? Tell them about how close your gun was.
Yeah, non-existent at that time. Yeah, so just bows in hand.
Do you carry spray or anything when you go out?
Oh yeah, definitely spray. Yeah, absolutely. Spray and usually bear banger between the two of us when we're out in pairs. But yeah, no, it would be nice to if they're loose or on the ATC permits for backcountry hunters, but that's a conversation for another time.
Do you have your restricted as well?
Yeah.
What would you carry?
10 mil Glock 20. Yeah. Ideally. Pretty, I think it's the most carried firearms for bear protection in the US currently.
Boy. Well, that's saying something. Yeah.
So yeah, that would be the gun of choice for sure. I have a short shotgun. I got that at Carr Churchill. But it's, you know, it's like, you know, 7-8 pounds. It's a bit of a, it's kind of not the best to kind of lunk around, and it's not exactly the quickest to get in front of you either. So
it's better than nothing. Shotgun. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I saw, it wasn't Steve Ranella. It was one of the other Meteor guys interview a fellow of that fucking, he was carrying both a 10 mil and fucking bear spray on him at the time, and bear charged him. He was able to get out. I think he pulled out the spray, fucking got it onto the bear. The bear fucked off. So like after like slashing him once or something, and then after that he waits around. He's like kind of injured. Like, all right, I think the bear is out of here. So he starts walking back to his truck. Fucking the bear like ends up walking back the same way and coinciding on the same path, right? And just comes at him and again, like he tries to pull his fucking 10 mil or whatever he had on him at the time, but the bear just it's just so quick, right? Like the bear mauls him before he can get there, and then just like fucks with them for 10 minutes until finally he looks dead enough that it fucks off. But I mean, moral of the story, sometimes there's really not a lot you can do when it happens so fast.
I always kind of say that, like, if I run into, like, a bear, I mean, like, worst case scenario, you get in between a bear and its cubs, or you get in between, like, a bear and its a kill. But, I mean, like, I mean, so much had to go right during that day for me and that bear to meet that it's like, you know, if I'm going to get mauled by a bear, then, like, that's the odds are not in my favor that day. But I've also heard that with bear spray, if you...
We're missing the exact key, the exact thing we need. The important thing. Eric, Connor, you froze right where you're saying something here.
Oh, really?
Something bear spray is, and then you went blank.
Gotcha. So, yeah, so with the bear spray, when you spray bear spray, I've heard that you're supposed to drop the can, because if you take the bear off, it can track you by the scent of the bear spray can.
Oh, that's interesting. I've not heard that.
And so if you spray the bear, but you keep the bear spray on you, it can still smell the bear spray and kind of like follow you.
Yeah. That's a little paranoid to me, honestly. I don't know.
I don't know if that's true or not. That's just something I'd heard. And
yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, like when I was in corrections, we get pepper sprayed as part of our training, and I definitely want to track down whoever sprayed me if I was a bear. That stuff works really well.
Yeah.
So that's self-defense. What do you hunt with?
For big game, at 30-06, and then for the bow season, I hunt with a recurve bow,
mm-hmm.
Which is about
Recurve, not draw.
Not compound, no. So I haven't had as much luck bow hunting, for sure, but I do enjoy the challenge of the recurve bow, mm-hmm. for sure. But there's definitely been times where I wish I had a compound bow. I'll put it that way, for sure.
Yeah, stretch that arrow out a little bit more, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And and then the rifle usually kind of comes out at the end of the season, just to kind of, you know, make sure I got some meat in the freezer for the upcoming off season.
What distance do you hunt with your recurve?
If I can get it, like, I'd like to animal to be within 25 yards, for sure. Mm-hmm. I always want to be ethical with my shot, but I'm accurate about 25 yards, but anything further than that, I don't want to take the risk.
Yeah,
so that's kind of where that challenge comes in, because you're going to have to call the animal in closer, or you got to sneak in closer. So I definitely haven't capitalized as much with the recurve, but it just kind of, I started with it, and now it's, I can't not capitalize with it before I switch to something else. So
fair enough. Yeah, no, I shoot recurve as well, and I was kind of curious. Because I know some people do hunt with recurve, and I like the challenge and things. If you make it harder, the reward is just that much sweeter.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So I've kind of been curious how far people shoot the recurve when they hunt, but 25 is definitely reasonable.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, I always kind of think too, it kind of gives the animal a bit of another advantage as well. So it kind of levels the playing field a little bit more, I feel.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, ethical bear hunting, it's just go at it with a knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. May the best man win, right?
Yeah.
No, somebody's coming home. Somebody's going home well fed.
Yeah.
Your 30-06 is what rifle?
So that'd be for big game, so.
No, what's the rifle?
It's just a Savage Axis. Nothing too special. Yeah.
Savage, we like that.
We like Savage around here. Yay.
Yeah.
We got to get some Savage gear. I can legit wear Savage gear because I shoot Savage. I gave away my Beretta stuff, and I've given away all that. Well, I got my license through Silver Corps, but I gave away a bunch of their stuff as well. But Savage. Need a hat or a shirt.
Yeah, he's dying for a hat.
Well, you know, I like to pass them out when I go places. Spread the word. I need more CUSF flyers as well. Actually, I'm all out. But I don't know what else to ask. Shotgun. What's your shotgun?
I got a Canuck. A Canuck Hudson. just recently picked this one up. It's a cheaper semi-automatic. I think it kind of, it's around retails for around, I think, $700-$800, but it's been pretty good to me considering, I mean, a little loose out of the box, but a couple of screws, tighten up some screws and she's good to go. But yeah, just a, you know, cheap 12 gauge semi-automatic gets the job done for sure.
Mm. Have you ever gone clay pigeon shooting? That's a big thing here.
Oh yeah. I mean, not as much to the, I guess the designated, or at least the clubs and stuff, but, definitely with the clay thrower out in Crown Land, definitely have a good time doing that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you speak to, say it's my first time going out for deer. I just got my license. I'm passionate about, the whole field to fork process. What advice can you give me for like a first time fella wanting to do it right? Not even like not wanting to take it to the butcher, actually wanting to do everything myself.
I hope you got lots of money in the bank. As starters, the butchering process is a slower process because you kind of, it takes a while to kind of get all the equipment. But yeah, I guess like the first thing to start would kind of boots to the ground and getting out and making fun. And whether it's, you know, private access that some family members have some land somewhere or friends or family or public land, I guess the first step would be making sure you have, you know where you're going and where you're hunting is you're legally allowed to. And then after that is kind of boots to the ground and, you know, trying to figure out areas where you think the deer are feeding and bedding and where there's kind of some high traffic zones and maybe setting up some trail cams to capture and narrow down on their behavior a little bit more. And yeah, and then it just kind of comes down to getting out there bright and early and hunting, capitalizing on the mornings and the evenings and making sure you're in the right areas at the right times. I mean, a lot of, I think, hunting depends on who you talk to and their experience, but I think a lot of it does come down to kind of being at the right place in the right time. So you just kind of want to make sure you're in the best, the spot that you think is will give you the best opportunity at seeing some deer and, you know, sitting in the cold for hours on end and listening to squirrels and, you know, not seeing a lot of movement, but, you know, at some point it'll happen. But yeah, I guess for me, it was all about kind of boots to the ground and really kind of figuring out different areas where I thought there was lots of, wildlife movement and then sitting in those areas, and that's worked well for me for sure.
So were you by yourself when you downed your first year, or were you with a mentor?
I was by myself when I did my first year.
So then how'd you prepare yourself for, I guess, your first kill? Because I know, even myself personally, when I was going out for deer initially, I was kind of, okay, I have all this advice, I kind of know where to go, I know where the deer are going to be. But fuck, what I'm nervous about is when I down my first deer, what comes next, right?
Yeah, no, that's so fair.
How'd you prepare yourself for that?
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't say I didn't have any mentorship. I had a buddy who had a girlfriend whose dad had shot a couple deer one year, and he had us over and kind of showed us briefly how to do it. That was kind of like the first introduction into the butchering process, but that was different because that was kind of like it was already hanging in his garage, and it was kind of butchering it while the deer's hanging. The field processing method's a little bit different, and I learned that through a couple websites, and there's actually, I think it's Montana Wild on YouTube. They did a really good video with Mystery Ranch on how they quartered an elk and packed it out in the backpacks. And that was, I watched that a handful of times, and that kind of really dialed in the process. But yeah, that's kind of like the field dressing process. So you kind of do the front, you'll skin the deer, do the front quarters, the back straps, the hind quarters, and then you can kind of get in behind the guts and get the tenderloins out, and then you flip it over and do the same process. And then somewhere in there, you kind of cut in between the ribs and pull out the meat. And then that's pretty much all you really take with you, outside of the head and some of the neck meat. But yeah, I guess I could maybe, I'll send you that link later, but yeah, they did a really good video that explains it really well, Montana Wild, but that's kind of the field dressing process. But the most important thing is actually having a backpack that's properly suited and it's got a proper frame on it.
Fuck, he's doing it again. Sorry, the most important thing is what?
Sorry,
the most. Is important right. Is, the most important thing is.
is having like a proper. If you're doing it, or if you're pulling it out of the bush with the backpack, is having a proper backpack with it's got a proper kind of loading frame to actually haul the meat. Because it can be quite uncomfortable with just kind of like a regular like 80-liter backpack. But yeah, I mean, and then the other option is you kind of drag it to your truck and hang it in a garage. And there's tons of different content on or websites or videos that'll help you kind of dress a deer in your garage. But yeah, the field dressing process is a little different.
If you're field dressing, how much weight and volume would you typically need to pack out?
It varies. Like an elk, you'll probably do a couple trips with a couple guys, right? You know, you're looking at, you know, 200-300-400 pounds of meat.
Mm-hmm. Say a deer.
Maybe a deer, a small doe you could do yourself. You're looking at maybe closer to, you know, 70-80 pounds of meat.
Mm-hmm.
A bigger deer, you're probably up towards 100-200 pounds, I think. But it could be off in my... I never really weighed it, to be honest with you, but that's kind of my general guess as to how much weight you're looking at carrying out.
And so I guess beyond just the marketing you got going on, I know you got 7R Outdoors, your clothing brand. What are you thinking about for the future? What do you hope to expand into in the outdoors industry?
Yeah, so me and my buddy started a small kind of lifestyle brand back in the day. It was kind of just designed to cover our gas and hunting tags. So we kind of sold some t-shirts and used the money to pay for our gas and hunting tags, and in return we developed kind of videos and content. And so yeah, that's kind of been on the back burner for a few years, but we're looking to kind of expand that here for the new year. Into some new stuff, but yeah, looking kind of more towards coffee and stuff like that. So I'll have some more information on that in the next few months. But yeah, it's kind of overtaken that coffee and merino wool clothing, functional outdoor wear. Yeah, no, for sure. So yeah,
all right.
I'm not sure if I have too much else. I went through the usual kind of gun. What's your next gun?
Next gun. I'm torn between the WK-180 and the WRMCR. Or WSMCR.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say the MCR is the way to go.
Yeah, I've definitely played with both, and the MCR feels a little bit sturdier for sure, but I think that would be the next gun. And that's just kind of more for target shooting and plinking than anything. But
do you do much of that, or is that just to get better at hunting?
Yeah, no, I've built up an okay 223. It's another Savage, but I've got a nice scope and stuff on it. So I definitely dabble in kind of the mid-range stuff with the lighter load 223 and kind of the coyote hunting rounds. But yeah, no, definitely love getting out and, you know, target shooting, whether it's 223s or, you know, shooting clay pigeons or, you know, just blasting stuff with a 22. It's always good to get out target shooting, as I'm sure Dave can attest to.
That's a little bit of a thunder shot. You guys
yeah.
Over the summer, so.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
You ever seen thunder shots, Wally?
No, what is that?
It's these explosive targets. But essentially they come in like, it's like aluminum fire, I think it's iron filings and ammonia pellets, and they're inert until you shake them together.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they're all coated on the ammonia pellets, they're still fairly harmless until you shoot it. It's got like a high activation energy. And then, yeah, you got a good little boom once you fucking hit her.
I mean, Tannerite is what most people... No,
yeah, out here, everybody just goes with Tannerite.
Oh,
yeah,
we got to promote Thundershot, Canadian made.
Right,
better,
okay.
Better quality.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, no, bigger boom for sure.
Bigger boom. If you, like, tried to blow up a tree, it's always a thing you see people do. Like, to, like, 10 of them wrap around at the base of an old tree and blow it up.
Oh, yeah. or various household appliances.
Yeah, I think pretty dangerous though. I have all sorts of crazy videos of people that like blow up a you know old toilet or something, and then they have like a
oh shit come flying.
Fridges.
FPS Russia.
Oh, there you go. He almost killed himself doing that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Fucking car door. You seen that video?
Oh man.
You want to watch the FPS Russia car door video?
if you want to, yeah. Sure.
Pretty much the opposite of hunting at this point, but let's see.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah, it's totally unfazed. It's like that wasn't even a close call. Yeah. Was there something where like his cameraman got hurt once in one of these videos? I think that was a thing.
I'm not sure. I could fucking imagine it.
Yeah. Tangentially related to that, if we're just doing side topics. So obviously FPS Russia got raided by the ATF to take away all his guns. And now Larry Vickers, it happened the same thing to him. ATF took away all his guns. Probably one of the best machine gun collections in the whole U.S. Gone.
Why'd they get raided?
Don't know. Well, I mean, for FPS Russia, I think it was a drug charge, which is like not even that surprising. But yeah, Larry Vickers, the guy is like Delta Force. He's clean, supposedly. So we don't know. It's still a big mystery.
Delta Force, like, actually?
Yes, yeah, he was actually...
okay, because Stolen Valor is like a hobby for a lot of people down
there. No, he's the real deal. Like, oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, well respected in the Special Forces community.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, both sides.
Well,
all right. Sounds like the birds are needing some feeding.
I need some feeding. I got to go to bed here in a minute. Early-ish start tomorrow. But yeah, no, that was an interesting episode. All over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep us posted on that hunt this weekend, Michael, and maybe we can talk about that a little bit next episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sorry I missed the last one. Could you imagine, though, if that would have happened a week later and we would have had Baldwin to talk about?
I sent Dave a message right after that.
We'd still be talking about that. That weekend, I took down probably 12 posts on Canada Gun Nuts on Baldwin in like 2 days. People were just conspiracy theorists and just nonsense.
Boy.
We'll wait until we find out what happened, and then we can discuss what went wrong. Obviously a lot.
That was some wild and on point shit for this podcast.
All right.
Yeah, let's call it a night, guys. Thank you very much, Connor, for stopping by. I'll do a quick shout out to our David, if you want to do sponsors, and then I'll wrap it up.
Yeah, Beretta, Cabela's, Savage, and Vortex. Big thanks to them all. So yeah, without the sponsorship, not possible to have the mentor hunts and all sorts of programming that we do today with
us up, so big thanks. Talk to Travis, see if we can get Silvercore on board.
Oh yeah, Silvercore is actually having an event with our CUSF Nova Scotia fellas in the coming months here, so Silvercore has been helping us out behind the scenes, so
mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a good interview as well.
Absolutely, good fella.
Yeah. All right, so for the listeners, scrolling across the bottom of the screen right now is our website, CUSF.ca. You can also find us on the Instagram at Canadian University Shooting Federation, and also CUSF Women. Check out what the ladies are doing. And of course on Facebook at Canadian University Shooting Federation, which is our group, or no, sorry, our page. And then also you can find this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts at Down the Barrel with the CUSF. So wherever you stream your podcasts, search Down the Barrel with the CUSF. So on behalf of myself, Swally Sweet, and the CUSF, thanks for stopping.
Where can we find you?
www.unchartedexposure.com.
Send that in that group chat we had on Facebook. Send that, and I can add it to the comment sections on the YouTube video.
Sounds good.
Cool. Thanks. All right. All right. Yeah. Let's call it. That was a good one.
Yeah, thanks again, gentlemen.
Yep.
Awesome.
Thank you again for tuning in. We meet again on the next podcast.